Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the secret of loving relationships and the numbers to call for coaching on having what you want in any area of your life. 866-254-1579. It's toll free. 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 760-918-4300. As always, I like to set the table before we go to the phones. And I want to talk about, it's not so much the secret. It was funny. We were talking about, I was talking with some friends about that I'm doing a show called The Secret to Loving Relationships. And, you know, and I sort of asked them for their vote on what's the secret. And, you know, one person said, well, you know, I think the secret is not going to bed angry. And somebody else said, well, actually, I think the secret is going to bed angry, like being willing to not have an important conversation when you're not up for it. Because I talk a little bit later on about this idea, you know, that in a funny way, some things are better left unsaid. You know, my first reaction, my first thought was, well, marry the right partner. And all of those things are interesting notions, but they're more at the level of strategy. And there are just a few things at the level of understanding that I think, in my experience, 20 plus years coaching people, but also 22 plus years being married to one of those people, really seem to make the difference in a loving relationship. And the first one, the first understanding, is really understanding the source of well-being. If you listen to the show, you hear me talk about this all the time, but your happiness, your well-being, your wisdom, it comes from within. It's not the fruit of something you do. It's the essence of who you are. And anything that you do to try and find that well-being from outside of you, particularly in the context of a love relationship, oh, I'm going to find my well-being in my partner, it's doomed to fail. But it's not doomed to fail because, oh, you'll never find somebody who can love you. It's doomed to fail because you can't find what hasn't been lost. And the confusion that we have as a culture, as a society, that comes out in our art, it comes out in our poetry, it comes out in all our cultural metaphors and mythology, as to the source and location of well-being, it's understandable. Because we look at somebody and we feel incredible love and we think, oh, they must have caused that. Well, they can't cause it unless it's already in there. They might have acted as a catalyst for it. They might have triggered our awareness of it. But it's been there all the time. You were born happy. And when you connect with that essential sort of source energy, that innate well-being, that essential nature, your relationships are going to prosper. And if I was going to say one secret, and I'm going to cheat because I'm going to give a few, but if I was going to pick one thing, it really would be that, because once you understand the source of well-being, then a loving relationship is just a game that you play. And think about it this way. Imagine that you are a professional gambler, but you're not a professional gambler. You're actually paid by the casinos. And what they do is they give you $1,000 a night to go and gamble at their casino. And they just pay you that cash. You get $1,000 just for walking in the door. But then they give you chips to play with. They give you $50,000 in chips every night to play. Because they know that if somebody's like playing a lot, that encourages other people to play. So basically, you're there to encourage other people to gamble. And you're playing with the house's money. So you're going to bet quite daring. You're going to really enjoy the game. You're going to play for fun. You might try things even if you think they won't work, because you know that whether you walk out of there with $1 million in chips or no chips, you still got your $1,000 in the pocket. You don't get to leave with anything extra if you do really well, and you don't lose anything if it goes badly, because your money's already in your pocket. Well, when you've got your well-being inside you, when you understand that well-being is just that, that's yours. You don't have to do anything for that. That's like having a nose. Then when you start to play the relationship game, it's just a game. And when it's going well, that's great. And you'll get a nice high from winning. And when it's going badly, you might kind of get a bit down. But you never really fall for it because you know you've already got what you came for in your pocket. You brought it with you and you're going to leave with it no matter what happens. So I'm going to get more into a couple other notions around that. But let me go right to the phones because there's a lot of people trying to get in. Numbers to get in if you want to get in. 866-254-1579, toll free, or from outside the United States, 760-918-4300. And let's go to Denise in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Denise, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I'm so glad I got to talk to you. Well, I've had a lifelong problem in all my relationships with I'm just really nice and people take advantage of me. And so the only way that I can get my way in life is to be controlling. And so I'm trying to find out how to balance people respecting me without having to be controlling or being taken advantage of for being nice.
Okay. Now, I'm going to say something, and I always hope people have listened to the show so they know when I sound like I'm being rude. I'm not really being rude. Do you believe that? Do you believe that's the problem? Is that it's just, you know, I'm just too nice. If only I wasn't nicer, my relationships would be better.
Well, I did in the past. Right now, I'm working on feeling more powerful and loving myself more, but I feel like there's still something I'm missing.
Okay, well, let's see if we can find it, because sometimes it's kind of, even if it's been missing for a long time, it's really just sitting right there. So one of my favorite metaphors for relationship is the evil pizza delivery man. Bear with me. This will make sense when we're done. And if not, you can ring off and just go, oh, my God, that was so weird. Okay, you with me?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So let's say that this there's a knock on your door and the evil pizza delivery man says, evil pizza delivery. And you go, why would I want an evil pizza? And he goes, no, the pizza's good. I'm evil. And it's like, okay, I didn't order pizza. Yeah, I know, but I'm going to give it to you. It's free. All you have to do is let me emotionally be emotionally abusive. Well, you're probably not going to take the pizza, right?
Right.
Unless you're really, really, really hungry. At which point you might think, you know, one slice, little bit of abuse, never again. And then you'll maybe have the slice and you'll take a little bit of abuse and you go, what am I thinking? God, this is ridiculous. Because once you're filled back up, well, why would anyone take the evil pizza delivery guy in? What's that about? But then a few weeks later, you kind of can remember, but you're really hungry again. When he comes back and offers more pizza, it's like, oh, God, I know I'm making a mistake, but okay. And the same thing happens, and then the cycle repeats. Does this sound familiar?
Yes.
So the trick isn't that the person needs to learn to be more assertive and to say no at the door. They need to learn a better place to get their pizza. And where you're, this metaphor, somebody's coming in the middle going, what? But you've got a kitchen, right? You can make your own food right there where you are. Your well-being is within you. You do not actually need anyone to do anything for you to be happy and well. And when you are in that place in you, when you're in touch with that, and you know what? It's not always going to be solid. Sometimes it'll be more. Sometimes it'll be less. Sometimes you'll feel really grounded in it. Sometimes it'll be a vague memory. But on the whole, when you're fulfilled, but you're fulfilled with what's already inside you, when somebody comes and basically is abusive towards you or is mean towards you, you're just going to tell them to piss off. And it's not because you're strong and it's not because you've learned techniques. It's because, why wouldn't you? But there is a reason. The reason that we don't is because when we're really, really hungry, when we're feeling empty, when we feel like there's something missing that they could possibly fill for us, then they're willing, when we become willing to put up with a bunch of crap. But the shift, like the leverage point, Denise, isn't in trying to be stronger or more controlling or less nice. It's in making sure that you show up full. It's like my My wife always, just years ago, especially when we didn't have very much money, she would always make sure that we ate before going grocery shopping, because we just would spend less on groceries that way. And it's the same thing. If you walk into a relationship feeling empty, you're setting yourself up.
Well, can I give you an example?
Yeah, sure.
Like, I have a 14-year-old daughter, and when she's away from me at school, I can feel fulfilled and happy and love myself and feel confident. But sometimes when she comes home and she's negative and angry, I keep ignoring it, and then after a while, her anger starts getting in me. And so this happens in other relationships, but when it's your own child and you can't get away from them.
Yeah, oh, our kids are our best teachers. No question about it. No, I mean, Gerald Jampolsky, I think, calls them teachers of patience. But here's the thing. There was an they used to do this thing at Universal Studios called the $6 Million Man show. I don't know if you remember that show, but basically, yeah. What they would do is they'd call out of the audience. They'd get these five big strong guys and one slight woman, and they'd set up a tug of war with the pit of death in the middle, and every time the woman, no matter how small she was, could pull these five guys into the pit of death. And the first couple times I saw it, I thought, oh, that's got to be a trick. These have to be plants. But, you know, we live near it, and, you know, I'd seen it a couple times. And it turns out, they explain the trick is the side of the floor that the guys are on is slick, and the girl is on a rubber mat. So she's got all the traction. So it doesn't matter that, in theory, they're much stronger than her and they can do all these things. Because she's got traction and they don't, she's going to win 10 times out of 10. Your traction in your relationship with your daughter, or your relationship with a man, or your relationship with anyone, is your groundedness in your own well-being. Because when you're really, just for whatever reason, just feeling really good, she can't get to you, right? There are days where whatever she does, it just doesn't get to you. Is that true?
I don't know if there's an entire day, but there are.
Okay. Give me an hour. There has been an hour. All right. No, I'll take that. In that hour, your traction, your groundedness in your own well-being is enough. You don't have more or less tactics in that hour than you do in the other hour. You don't have more or less relationship techniques to use or choose from. You're just more grounded. You've got rubber-soled shoes on. And then what happens is, over time, maybe the rubber wears away a bit and you start slipping again. And then she can pull you back off balance.
Okay, that makes sense.
So if you want to make a real difference for yourself, the place to put your attention, I'm not telling you how to do it because it's going to be unique to you, but the place to put your attention is on your own well-being and groundedness in that. And do you know what? It's going to get better, and you'll have better and worse days. And there'll be people who can really pull you out of that grounding quite quickly for a while. And there'll be others who you find it actually gets quite easy to stay grounded with. But you don't have to work on being more controlling. You don't have to be less nice. You just have to not be so hungry.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Is there anything else you want to ask about that, or do you kind of feel like, all right, let me go play with this, and I'll call him back and tell him why he was wrong next week?
Well, I wanted to ask, is there a technique on working to be more grounded?
Well, here's what's interesting. Grounded is actually home. Like, you're born happy. We just had my second godson was, what actually, third godson? I'm going to offend some godparents here, but a new godson was born unto us last week. And as always, when I see, you know, newborn babies, I'm just reminded that it's all right there when we're born. We're just in it. We're just in this place of bliss and peace that, you know, people say, oh, everyone's trying to return to the womb. I don't think they're trying to return to the womb. I think they're trying to return to that well-being that we're all born into. And all that can happen is we get distracted from it. We get caught up in our thoughts about, oh, it should be this way, or I should be that way, or it should be different, or I should be different. And that pulls us out of it for a time. But as soon as we stop putting so much weight on those ideas, we actually fall right back into our well-being. So it's not so much a technique. I mean, I can give you a technique to feel good. Think a happy thought.
Right.
Put your hand on your heart. Think a happy thought.
It's easy for me to be grounded by myself. It's just when I'm around other people that after they've been pulling and pulling, it eventually wears me down.
Right. So what it sounds like is it might be useful for you to notice that an hour sooner. Do you know what I mean? It's like if you just notice, wow, I'm getting pulled here. Now might be a good time for me to take a little break. You know, I'm gonna go for a little walk. I'm gonna send you for a little walk. I'm gonna go do something. That's enough. In other words, Denise, you're really not that far away.
Well, I'm gonna try that.
And just play with it. Just be with it and call back. Call back anytime because it's so simple. And yeah, it takes a little bit of time to get a feel for it.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Denise. Thanks for phoning in.
Bye.
Let's go to Martin in Calgary. Martin, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hello. Let me describe. About a month ago, I started using your system, The Only One Thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely love it. I'm a lot more calm and focused and relaxed. And I'm experiencing a lot more, as you call it, effortlessness.
Yeah.
For me, I love the idea that I can choose the task from the short list and it doesn't feel forced or and I rebel. I don't rebel or resist as much as I used to. And so my question is this. The longer I use it, I'm realizing I'm missing one more step, I think. And that's dealing with the rest of the stuff that's not on the short list. So do you have any suggestion about what to do about all the tasks or projects that enter your life or your mind? Meaning there are things you have to do, you want to do, maybe things you could do someday. I used to have a master list with categories much like the GTD by David Allen.
Yeah.
But maybe you have something simpler, you usually do. So how do you keep track of it, or what do you suggest that kind of is between this daily thing, the one only thing, and sort of the bigger picture?
Well, I mean, I actually, and I'm not saying this is the way to do it, but what I find useful is having a bigger window. You know, most people have a backlog, but what most people don't have is a front log.
Okay.
So in other words, they know what they're behind on, but they don't know what they aren't yet behind on.
Yes.
So I actually have, I'm sitting here at my desk, and I actually have above my desk a board, and it says by today, by tomorrow, by the end of the week, within 2 weeks, within a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got little post-its in each of those columns. And so I can look, and I can kind of get a sense just from looking at that at what's coming.
Okay.
And a lot of the time, I can pick it off in advance. Because I'll find myself with a break, and I can look at something it's on the list for within 2 weeks. But actually, you know what? I could take care of that now.
So you put that on your the only one thing list, or just
Or I just make it the only one thing. I don't necessarily physically actually write it out. The thing about the system is the system's a trick, right? The system is a way. For those of you who have no idea what we're talking about, there's a time management technique. You can read about it in Supercoach. I think probably there was a radio show on it you can find in the archives.
The
only thing you need to do today, where you essentially, you make a list of all the things that there are to do, but you have one piece of paper and on it just says, the only thing I have to do today is... And you put one thing from the list on there, and that's it. Because you're only going to do one thing at a time successfully anyways. And by just focusing on that one thing, what happens is time slows down. Because time's made up anyways, right? It's in our head, you know. It's the Einstein thing of, you know, relativity is that a minute with the girl that you love can seem like an hour with the girl that you love can seem like it passes in a minute. A minute with your hand on a hot stove can seem like an hour. You know, time isn't a fixed thing. And when you slow down by just, okay, this is the only thing I have to do today, time expands and it gets easier to do things. The stress levels drop. You can be more creative. Now, you don't have to physically do that. Once you sort of get that, wow, slowing down really works. Doing one thing at a time really makes a difference. Well, then you can continue to do that without necessarily having to write it down each time. And what I find is having that sort of front log where I can look ahead and see, all right, what's there when I've got space. I mean, if I'm caught up in what's on my list now, well, no, I do that. But there's always times where you're kind of done. You know, you're just like, I don't need to do that anymore. You know, there isn't a one thing right now on my list. And for me, what having that front log does, being able to look out and go, okay, well, that's what's by tomorrow, that's by the end of the week, that's within 2 weeks. You know, there's not like a due date on it, but it's within that time frame, within a month. What it does for me is does two things. It lets me take care of things before they need to be taken care of so that I don't get as many crises hitting me.
Yeah.
You know, where if I've left it and left it and left it, by the time it gets to me, it needs to be done now. If I took care of it 2 weeks ago, it's never going to need to be done. But the other thing that it does is it helps me from taking on too much. That's one of my personal list, like bugbears, is I just have this, you know, I think I can do everything.
That's my issue.
You know, well, you know, because we're supermen and we know that. But when I can look at it, and somebody says to me, hey, do you want to do this or would you do this? I can look, and if my board is already full, it's pretty easy to say no then, because it's like, well, actually, no, I'm already up to something. See, what messes us up with time management is we're not really up to anything. So it's like, you know, you're just hanging out, and your friend says, hey, do you want to go to a movie? And you go, yeah, all right, let's go to a movie. And then somebody else says, hey, could you help me with this? And you're like, yeah, all right, I'll help you with that. But if on that same day, you had a plane to catch, it wouldn't matter how much you liked your friends or how much you wanted to see the movie. You'd go, you know what? I'd love to see the movie, but I got a plane to catch. Do you know what? I'd love to help you out, but I got a plane to catch.
Yeah.
And so when you know what you're up to, it gets much, much easier to say no to all the things that you could be up to. If you're not really up to anything, well, then, yeah, everything pulls on you and everything sounds good in the moment and you wind up with a lot of overload and a lot of overwhelm.
Mm-hmm. And what about, this actually makes a lot of sense to me. And what about the things that enter your mind about projects you could do that are not necessarily in your front log? They are just kind of, you know, this would be actually great to do.
Mm.
Do you keep track of
again,
that at all, or do you just let it go?
Here's what I find, Martin, is that the simplest time management systems are the ones that take the least time to manage.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than try to add more layers of complexity to it, like I love the theory of Dave Allen's system.
I find it complex. I love the theory of it.
But the reality is when I tried to do it, and this is just me, this is nothing against the system, I was so much more messed up trying to run it. Now, somebody would say, oh, well, you just didn't take it far enough. I like simple.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's more the principle behind it than the system itself. And the principle behind it is when I slow down, when I just take one thing at a time, everything else kind of will organize itself around me. And just from that one principle, I might develop little systems and little reminders and little habits because they're useful.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need to, okay, now do I do this or this? Do I write this down here or do I write this down in this column? That just makes it more complex for me.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Is that useful?
Yeah, it does. The slowing down, I have to say that for the last month, I actually got a lot more done. Even though
that's what's so ironic. Slowing down to get more done is so counterintuitive, and boy, does it work.
And it totally just surprised me. It just surprised me a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, brilliant, Martin. Thank you. Keep us posted.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. We're going to come back. We've got, we're going to get back to talking about relationships and loving relationships. Dana, Margie, and Elena are next in the queue. If you want to get in, 866-254-1579 is the number to call. And I'll also share a couple more ideas after the break about some of these other secrets that can really make the difference in having a long-term loving relationship. We will be right back after this.
800.
1, 2, 3, hit it!
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about the secret to a loving relationship. And in the first part of the show, I talked about the secret is really being just an understanding. And it's understanding the source of well-being is something that is inside you, not something that's going to come to you through your partner. It's not the fruit of something. It is the essence of you. Well, I want to talk about a couple of little implications of that. And one is the thing that really helps in a relationship is when you understand the power of moods and thought. You're creating your experience of your partner. You're creating your experience of your life, but you're creating your experience of whoever it is that you're spending time with through the power of thought. In other words, I sometimes say, you know, there are four of you in any relationship. And two of you are really in the way. There's you, your partner, the version of your partner that you argue with in your head, and then the version of you that they argue with in their head. And when you connect to the person instead of the thought of the person, good things happen, but we get caught up. You know, it's just what happens. You know, when we get caught up in sort of positive, uplifting thoughts and we're feeling really connected, we feel good and we thrive and our relationships thrive. But when we get disconnected, when we get caught up in thoughts about my wife and I used to think about it is there's two aspects to a relationship. At an essence level, anyone can connect with anyone. And there's no more beautiful feeling than that feeling of deep connection and loving connection between two people that I'm aware of. But we get caught up in these thoughts about, well, no, whether they put their socks away is more important than the loving connection. No, whether or not they can support me is more important. No, whether or not, and we get caught up in thoughts that something is more important than that deep sense of loving connection that we can share. And my experience is there's no point in being in a relationship if anything's more important. The purpose of a relationship, from what I can see, is to intensify and reflect that well-being that's innate inside us. And because if we both come into the relationship full, if we're both resting in our well-being, then what happens is that well-being in me gets reflected in your well-being, and it gets amplified through our connection, going back and forth, heart to heart, soul to soul. I mean, to make it really simple, the purpose of a relationship, especially a loving relationship, is just to enjoy each other's company. And if you try instead to like use your relationship to change the way that you feel, or use the relationship to change the way your partner thinks, it's just a losing game. You might win in the moment, but you're going to lose the game. The more of your time you just spend enjoying each other's company and just really grooving on that wonderful deep connection that you can have between you, the stronger your relationship's going to be. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Dana in New York, New York. Dana, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Okay, my question is, I would like to have a loving relationship, but for some reason in my life, like, I've been unable to create that. I've been single most of my life, and I just...
So what do you make up is the reason that you've been unable to create that? And I say make up not because it's because we all make it up. I mean, look, none of us know why anything happens really, but we all have our theories. What do you make up?
What do I make up?
In other words, if I said it to you, yeah, go ahead.
Maybe that I'm used to being single. I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure if I deserve to be in a relationship. I don't know. It's just like something that keeps reoccurring, and I just want to create something different. I'm 30, and I would like to have a relationship. I would like to have a family eventually. Mm-hmm. And
so what if it wasn't you? I just want to let's just kick the tires on an idea here. Okay.
Can you say that one more time?
Yeah. What if it wasn't you? What if the reason you weren't in a relationship actually wasn't to do with you? Let's just play that game. I'm not saying that's true. But what if it was just a question of you haven't met the right person yet? Now, I'm not saying, again, understand, I just want to play with an idea and let's see where it takes us. If you knew that it was just you hadn't met the right person yet, what would you still do or what would you be inclined to do to create a loving relationship?
just live my life and be happy with myself.
Right, but if you wanted a relationship as well, what might you do as you're living your life and being happy with yourself? What might be some things that you would do, you know, if it really was just you hadn't met the right person yet? What might you do to
You're breaking up. I'm sorry. Can you see the last thing?
Yeah, I'm guessing it's you that's breaking up, Dana. But
no,
it's okay. But in a way, that's actually a nice metaphor for what we're talking about, is is we assume that it's the other person,
okay,
you know, or that it's us. And it really can be quite simple. So I'll try and say it again. And if it doesn't work, then I'll talk it and you can listen off air. But let's try and do it together. Okay? Mm-hmm. If you knew that the only reason you weren't in a loving relationship right now was that you hadn't met the right person yet, what occurs to you to do to meet the right person?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Just to go out and.
Let me try it a different way. Okay. Let me try it a different way. Let's play with this. Do you think it would be more or less likely that you would meet the right person if you went to live in a cave in northern Hoboken?
No.
Less likely?
Not.
Okay.
Yeah,
not. Do you think it would be more or less likely if you shaved your head and tattooed a picture of SpongeBob SquarePants on your skull?
No.
Would that make it less likely?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's probably right. So what might you do that might make it more likely?
I'm not sure. I'm feeling kind of stuck.
No, I got that. I got that. That's why we're still talking.
Yeah.
So, okay, how about this? If you... I had a client once who used to, she realized that the thing that made the difference in her day, she was an actress and, you know, was being photo shoot ready. That even if she didn't have any work on, she got made up in the morning as if she was going to have a photo shoot. And she just really, that she just felt really good about herself and she had a great day when she did that. So if you did that, I'm not saying this is what you need to do. If you, got yourself together the way you would for a date whenever you were going out, do you think that might make it more or less likely that you would meet somebody?
Probably more likely, I think.
Right. It just makes it, I'm not saying you have to do that, but we can see shaving your head and tattooing SpongeBob on your forehead, less likely. Dressing up nice, more likely. Okay, we're just trying to get a distinction going here.
Mm-hmm.
What else might make it more likely?
So you mean taking better care of myself and just wanting myself in a better way?
Sure, understanding that that's not going to make the relationship happen.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes it more likely. So in other words, all we can do is we can tilt the odds slightly in our favor. The difference between, I used a gambling metaphor earlier, I'll use a different one here. The difference between blackjack and other games at casinos is blackjack is the only game, as far as I understand it, where you can tilt the odds in the favor of the gambler as opposed to the house.
Mm-hmm.
If you count cards in a certain way.
Okay.
Now, you're only actually shifting the odds by about 5%. You're not making a major shift. It's just making it 5% more likely that you'll win. But that 5% is so significant in terms of how the results play out over time that they will do anything they can to stop people from counting cards.
Okay.
So what I'm talking about here is you can't make a relationship happen. I mean, you can try, but making a relationship happen is like trying to make a seed grow into a plant. It's like it's either going to grow or it's not. But yeah, if you water it, if you make sure the soil is good, if you give it light, it's more likely.
Mm-hmm.
So what if it was as simple as getting that, yeah, you absolutely, your well-being's inside you, you don't need to be in a relationship, and all of that is still true.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just going to do a few things that just might shift the odds 3%, 4%, 5% in your favor.
Okay. So just feeling better about myself and putting myself out there.
What do you tell me? You say that like I just said, I'm sorry, Dana, you're just going to have to accept it. You're going to die. You know, I wasn't actually suggesting this is supposed to be a painful thing.
No, I mean, I'm saying whenever I do put myself out there, I attract the wrong type of guy. As far as
don't give those ones your phone number.
Okay, I get that.
You know, it's funny. Again, with each of this stuff, it's there's a weird comfort in understanding that it really isn't up to you. And sure, you can make it more likely. Because if it was up to you, then you'd have to beat yourself up about it not working yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, if it was Dana's fault, then we're going to do therapy instead of coaching.
Yeah.
But my experience is it's not. Yeah. You know, if sometimes things work, sometimes they don't. And
yeah,
sometimes things that...
I was feeling like I was doing something wrong, basically.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it to me, Dana. But that's not to say, hey, you know, so what the heck, let me tattoo SpongeBob on my forehead.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And have fun with it. I mean, with all these things, you know, sometimes I worry when people listen to a call like that, that they think, oh, right, okay, so what I'm supposed to do is I'm supposed to dress up and I'm supposed to put on makeup and I'm supposed to go out. No, these aren't behavioral prescriptions. If you get that what you control is a little bit of it. You can control maybe 5%, maybe 10% of the likelihood. If it's not in the cards, it's not in the cards. But you may as well do your bit. And it doesn't matter because you're playing with the house's money, because you've already got your well-being, whether you're in the relationship or not. From that place, it's actually, you got the best chance of getting into that kind of relationship you want. If you're not in that place, it's just going to be that much harder. If it's really in the cards for you, you're going to meet the guy in the cave in northern Hoboken because he's going to happen to be in the same cave. But there are certainly things you can do that make it that little bit more likely, or things you can stop doing that make it that little bit less likely. So, you know, no more tattooing skulls with SpongeBob, and let's see how many relationships we can create here. Let's go to Margie in Ontario. Margie, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I was in a 30-year marriage that I had no communication with, and I can honestly say I never really knew the man.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went into a 6-year relationship with a very needy, insecure man who needed 24/7 attention. It was like from one extreme to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been, that relationship dissolved about 8 months ago. Now I'm just in a position to, how do I ever get my trust and faith back in pursuing another relationship? Like I just am at the point where I feel like I don't want another man in my life, and yet I don't want to be alone the rest of my life. And I don't know, I just kind of at a crossroads here. I just don't know where or how to pursue.
Also, but this is, I think this is a great question. This is a, you know, really relevant is right now, do you want to be in relationship? Right now, like, you know, if you knew that a year from now you would be in a loving relationship, do you really want to be in one today?
Probably not right today, no.
Okay. See, that's what I hear right away as we speak.
Okay.
And it really then it's just a case of the faith isn't in how do I have faith to pursue a relationship. The faith is in yourself.
Mm.
That right now that's not what you want.
Right. Okay.
And so right now you've got exactly what you want. And when the time comes, and it probably will, that you do want to get back
involved.
I suppose
that's my problem, is I feel like it may never come to that point, and that's what worries me, I guess. I guess I'm scared to be alone, I suppose, maybe the rest of my life.
Right, and that's a scary thought. I mean, if I want to sit and think about that, I can scare myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's true. If I watch a scary movie, I can get really scared.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really, you know, if you can contain it, if you can just recognize, oh, okay, that's me trying to scare myself into doing something that I don't really want to do,
mm-hmm.
Then you can kind of see it for what it is, and you don't need to do anything about it. And you just kind of go, yeah, yeah, that'll pass.
So this
and then,
pass.
Yeah, and when exactly, and when the time comes, if the time comes, and I'm sure it will come, where you go, you know what, I'm ready to be in relationship again. At that point, you'll come to it so clean. You come to it without this history and without having to convince yourself that it's good and without having to worry about, is it okay? And because you'll be ready. Mm. You're not ready right now.
Okay.
Sorry to make it simple.
Well, that's probably what I needed to hear, though.
Oh, thank you very much, Marcia.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay. Let's go to Elena in New Jersey. Elena, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I am in a relationship. I'm married. And there are a few things, but this one in particular. When I come to my husband's office, I don't necessarily stop at every... I say hello, but I don't necessarily stop at every desk to chat. And I just go about my business. And my husband gets very upset with me, saying that I'm not being nice, I'm not being cordial, I'm not doing all those things. And when I do remember, I consciously make an effort to be more outgoing and expressive. But sometimes, if I'm distracted, if I don't think about it, I just don't do this. And then he gets very upset with me. And when he lectures me, then I feel really, really small. What, I mean, I try to understand that this is his way of, I don't know, expressing his insecurity or whatever, but how do I not feel very small?
Well, okay. I mean, let's explore. I mean, I don't know. Let's find out.
Okay.
What is it that, see, because if he just said that, let's say he said it all in French. Do you speak French?
I speak Russian.
Okay, good, because you're not supposed to speak the language I'm using for this example. So let's say that he said everything that he said, but he said it in French. And you didn't know what he was saying. You just, would you feel small?
No, unless there's like a facial expression.
Right, but so, you know, in other words, if you, in order, it's not that he's saying it. It's that you're hearing it and you're taking it on in a certain way.
Okay.
So the bit, again, you know, he's going to say what he says.
Right.
But then the question becomes, okay, what is it about, why am I taking this on in a way? What is it that I'm thinking this means about me? That
well,
I
that's exactly what I'm thinking, maybe. It does mean about me that I'm aloof, which I don't think I'm aloof, but I do think I'm reserved and shy, and that's how it comes across.
Okay, so can we take a step back from this and can
Absolutely.
We step away from you know, the specific of your, and let's just look at relationships in general. Okay, we've got a choice in relationship. If we think that we're in relationship to get our needs met, you know, that our partner is supposed to do something for us and we're supposed to do something for them, we're going to have the typical difficult relationship. Where when everything is going great, we're going to get on really well. But the second that you stop meeting my needs or I stop meeting your needs, we're going to have problems. It's just a setup for a low functioning relationship.
Okay.
If we're in relationship because we really love that feeling of connection that we have when there's love there and we really enjoy each other's company most of the time. I mean, everyone gets on everyone's nerves, but you know, most of the time, we really just enjoy being together. Then we're going to recognize that sometimes our partners are going to do things that we don't like. But we're not in relationship with them in order for them to please us. We're in relationship with them because we, on the whole, enjoy being with them. So we're going to let that go most of the time. Similarly, if our partner is with us because they want, you know, to enjoy our company and to be with us and have a loving relationship. Well, it's going to be the same both ways. Sometimes they're going to lose their temper with us, but ultimately they kind of know, look, in the end, none of this really matters. It feels like it matters right now because we're all caught up in it. But in the end, it doesn't. Now, do you understand, is that reason for being in relationship meaningful to you?
Sure.
So then what you can know is that when you, you know, when your husband goes off and you feel small, it really is, it's not whether it's about you or not about you or if it's accurate or inaccurate. It's just irrelevant. That's just whether somebody thinks you're a nice person or not a nice person or that you should have done this or you shouldn't do that. It's not really relevant to your relationship. Does that make sense? That it's not about, how am I supposed to be so that you'll love me?
Okay.
It's just, hey, this is how I am. And if I've upset somebody, I'm certainly going to do my best to make amends. If I step on someone's toe, I'm going to say sorry. But that's as far as it goes. I mean, my guess is you don't walk into the office to offend people. Is that correct?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. See, my psychic powers are increasing the longer I stay here. But sometimes maybe people do get upset, right? That could happen, couldn't it?
But I think it's more his perception. I don't think people do get upset. I think he
right. But let's even say, you know, I'm not disagreeing with you, Elena. But let's even say that maybe people do get upset. That might happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't mean you're a bad person.
Sure.
So here's my question for you, and I get that this is not necessarily an easy question to answer. It may even be a question to just sit with rather than answer, but let me ask it anyways. Is, given that you don't know for sure how people are responding to you, and that you know that you have no intention to cause any upset or bad feeling, if for whatever reason your husband chooses to berate you for doing what you did, why is upset the way for you to feel? In other words, what does his upset have to do with your upset?
Well, because I get immediate feedback. And it's hurtful.
Okay.
Or at least I perceive it as hurtful.
Right, but you get immediate feedback. Like if you knew that you weren't even there,
mm-hmm.
and he did the same thing, would you take it personally?
No.
No. So it's not that you're getting immediate feedback. At some level, you're going, because he does that, that must mean I blank.
Okay. And you're saying there's no
connection. I'm saying there is zero cause effect there.
Interesting.
And again, like I say, I don't expect you to kind of agree with me or just kind of go, oh, well, great. You know, no problem. He can carry on forever now. But if you open up to that, if you just look at that, what I know from experience you're going to see is almost nothing is personal. We just live in separate realities and we get caught up and we react how we react. And it only feels, it's like because it brushes up against whatever our little wounds are,
mm-hmm. It
feels like it was personal. It feels like, oh, they hurt me. But it wasn't them. They just brushed up against your insecurity or your wound in that moment.
I see.
And when you get that, it creates like an insulation around you. It creates this safe space where really it doesn't matter what people do. You don't get hurt by it because you get that it's not about you.
Very, very good. I just always thought that in personal relationship, everything is personal. Apparently not.
Absolutely not. There's nothing more impersonal. And that's why there can be so much love. Because love is what's present when we don't get in the way.
I see. Well, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Elena.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. We have come to the end of another show. My thanks to Joe and Steven Studio for keeping us on air. If you like the kind of things we talk about, check out www.geniuscatalyst.com. And we're going to be back with a brand new show next week. Have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.